Welcome to Out of the Question, a podcast that looks behind some common questions and uncovers the question behind the question while providing real solutions for biblical world and life view. Your host is Andrea Schwartz, a teacher and mentor and founder of the Chalcedon Teacher Training Institute.
Thanks for tuning in. For those who may not be regular listeners to this podcast, a number of weeks ago, I had Dr. George Delgado of the Steno Institute as a guest to explain the functionality of the abortion pill and the successful research and protocol he and others have done in helping women who regret their initial decision to abort and help them maintain their pregnancy. Many were surprised to learn that over 70% of the abortions that take place in the U.S. are of this chemical nature, where the mother herself administers the deadly drug and then customarily delivers her now dead child into a toilet, which is then flushed. When I tell that to people, I can't describe the look on their face. When I asked Dr. Delgado, tell me about what that says about our groundwater, then people perk up, you see, because now this might have some relationship or adverse effect on them. But most people are horrified, and some actually have this look of, why did you have to tell me that? Now I know. But such is the case. Well, back when Roe v. Wade was overturned and the justices in essence said that murder will be determined at a state level rather than at a federal level, many rejoiced that the pro-life side had succeeded. But is that true? Is there anywhere in the country where anyone can claim it is truly abortion-free? My guest today is Bradley Pierce, a Christian, a husband, a father of 11 and soon to be 12, and head of the Foundation to Abolish Abortion. Now, Bradley has been on this podcast before, specifically about a year and a half ago, and then he discussed the fact that he and other abolitionists are eager to get the laws of the land reflective of God's law in this regard. And they put together a docuseries called Abortion Free, which can be seen on YouTube, documenting how, with the reversal of Roe, it is likely that more, not fewer, abortions are taking place. Thanks for joining me again, Bradley.
Hey, thanks for so much for having me. It's good to be with you.
Now, there are a number of topics I wish to explore with you today, but let's tackle the elephant in the room. Abortion is far from over, correct? And to use the phrase, far from being unthinkable.
Right, exactly. So, you know, for 49 years, the pro-life movement wanted to get rid of Roe versus Wade and accomplish that in 2022. The justices of the U.S. Supreme Court said, you know, Roe versus Wade is unconstitutional, which many of us have been saying for a long time, and they agreed. And in fact, we submitted a brief in that case, and we argued, yes, you should overturn it, it's unconstitutional. And they did that. And a lot of people were under the impression that, oh, that's all we needed to do in order to end abortion in this country, that was what was holding the states back, and that now all the Republican states, at least, all the pro-life states, now that Roe is gone, now abortion's gone in my state. So I don't have to worry about it in my state. Yeah, I still have to worry about it in the Democrat states, and we need to go deal with that. But at least in my state, you know, the work here is done. We can, you know, just kind of brush our hands off and move on to the other important issues that we need to deal with, because we've dealt with that one. No more babies being murdered in my state. But that's not true. That's not what happened. And now, as you said, we're seeing abortion numbers nationwide are higher than they even were 10 years ago. And even in these states that had trigger bills, meaning that when Roe was overturned, that automatically triggered those bills to supposedly protect life from conception, they actually don't. And abortion numbers, even in those states, the numbers of babies from those states being aborted is higher than it was even 5 years ago.
Now, that's a shocking statistic for those who felt like, okay, intellectually, politically, I can be pro-life. I think we're getting to a point where we really have to figure out what that actually means. I've heard a lot of people say things like, well, a lot of abortion clinics closed. Wouldn't you rather save some babies? I mean, isn't it better? You know, and I'd like, well, now let's think about that. Better for whom? The baby that died? What, was that baby giving it the good old college try but didn't make it? And so I think we have gotten really numb to the reality of the judgment that God's word says will be presented and inflicted and showered on a people who disregard God's law so vehemently. Would you say that the attitude that we see now is as much a manifestation of antinomianism as it is apathy?
I think both. Yeah, we certainly have people who just don't care, or they put their hands on their ears, right? Hear no evil, see no evil. And there's that. And then there's also just people who just say like, oh, well, live and let live. Like you said, antinomianism, you know, well, that's, yeah, I'm not going to murder my baby, but, you know, who am I to judge other people? And we certainly see a lot of that going on.
So when we're told what pure religion is, to care for widows and orphans, I think a lot of times within pro-life circles, we've included the pregnant woman as part of that women and, you know, the fatherless. And that's certainly true. In other words, there are plenty of people who have been abandoned in a pregnancy, and whether or not we would officially call them widows, they certainly don't have a husband and a father there with them. But that's not the case in all abortions, and that seems to be the linchpin in terms of where an abolitionist differs from a pro-lifer, in as much as the abolitionist is saying God is no respecter of persons, and he certainly doesn't expect, want, or prescribe partiality. Explain that so that the people who are listening to our discussion will understand how crucial a point this is.
Yeah, well, I think the ultimate linchpin between all of those folks who call themselves pro-life, which, hey, we're all for life, but when we say pro-life, we're associating ourselves with a movement that has been around for decades and has, you know, certain doctrines and things that are generally held by the leadership and taught by the leadership. And so there's a lot of problems with the pro-life movement's general doctrines and teachings. And so the ultimate linchpin between that, the pro-life movement's general positions, and abolitionists is the law of God. Is the abolitionist says, what does God say we should do? What does God say we should not do? Okay, well, let's do that. And let's not be afraid to say that we're doing what we're doing and we're not doing what we're not doing because God says. Whereas much of the pro-life leaders, if you go listen to them, so many of them are, although they may personally be Christians, many of them, they say, well, whoa, whoa, this isn't about religion, right? As soon as the pro-abortion person or the TV news anchor says, well, you're just trying to, you know, impose your religion on others, they're like, well, no, this isn't about religion. This is about science. This is about human rights. This is about this and this is about that. Well, at that point, now you're just a human being who is trying to impose your opinions on some other human being. And you're claiming it's human rights and science and all that, but ultimately, who decides, right? Who decides that it's wrong for a mother to murder her own child, right? Maybe people say, oh, no, I agree that it is a person, and I agree that, you know, you shouldn't do this. But actually, I think mom's rights trumps baby's rights, whether the baby's a human or not. If mom doesn't want the baby, mom can discard the baby. And unless you have some transcendent law, then all of us are just trying to impose our opinions on one another. And so that's why the abolitionist says, no, we have to start with God says it. And not be afraid to say God says it. And so that's the fundamental difference. And that's when then the application of that is, well, God says you shall not murder. God says that life begins at conception, right? And I could get into many of these principles in the biblical, you know, the scriptures behind all of them, but God says it, it's fertilization. And God says it should be equal justice, that if harm is done to a born person and harm is done to a person before they're born, that justice is the same, regardless of who it is, based upon that harm. And God makes that very clear. And so that the abolitionist says, well, then that's how we should treat people before they're born, the same way we're treated. It should be the same justice system, the same laws. We already have laws against homicide that protect us. It should be the same laws that protect them. That's what it means to love your neighbor as yourself. And we need to do so without partiality, which God forbids us to do, which means we cannot, that term partiality means regard faces. We cannot say, well, this person gets different justice because they have a different face, right? They're black or they're white or they're woman or they're a man or they're born or they're not yet born. No, no, no. We're to judge cases on the merits and we're to write laws that don't discriminate upon identity of the parties, but provide justice based upon the actual facts of the case. And we do all that, and that's the position of abolitionists because that's what God says. That's what God tells us to do.
So it would seem that abortion really isn't even a political issue unless you force it into being a political issue. It's a matter of right and wrong. We're talking ethics. We're talking a standard independent of individuals. And I'll go back to the idea that most professing Christians are antinomian, whether or not they know they're antinomian. I found it interesting in the many churches I have visited that we don't say the Ten Commandments anymore. We don't say the two great commandments anymore. And you just cited the second of the two, love your neighbor as yourself. So it's easy to say, oh, yes, I'm pro-life. I donate to here. I donate to there. But as we know, God knows the heart. And if it was your family that was facing extermination, people would get a whole lot more involved. So do you think that the fact that we don't have laws that say whoever is the person who initiates the process of killing a child is guilty of murder, and that any help, those who help or abet in that are guilty of being liable as bystanders to this? Why don't you think people get enraged over this?
Yeah, I mean they're accomplices, people who help. I mean, ultimately it goes back, it reflects our own hearts. It reflects our own biases, our own prejudices, in that we are more human than them. And even when people say, oh, well, no, I do believe that a fetus is a person, from fertilization, we're all person made in the image of God. Well, how do you treat them? How do you act? Do you act like they're persons? Do you want them protected with the same laws protecting you? Oh, well, no. Are you acting like people are actually being murdered? No. Then you don't really believe it. You don't really believe it. Actions speak louder than words. And that should be a conviction to all of us, right? I mean, that convicts me all the time that am I truly acting like their life is as valuable as my life? If I'm not, then I'm being partial in a way that God forbids. I'm being partial in judgment and what I call it like born privilege. People talk about like white privilege and things like that, and there's all kind of problems with that. But kind of extending it, it's like, oh, well, laws for me, but not for thee, right? Well, yeah, I don't want there to be exceptions to the laws for my life. I don't want people to be able to murder me. And yeah, if someone does murder me, I want there to be justice. I want those laws, the very strict penalties deterring people from murdering me. Well, then you should want those same laws protecting your preborn neighbor as well. That's what love is, loving as yourself. And if you're not loving as yourself, at least, then you're not really loving.
So I'm thinking of the many trials that take place when someone has been murdered, and you have family members of the murdered individual sitting in the courtroom. You might ask the question, well, it's not going to bring their loved one back if this person receives the full extent of justice. Why do they care? Because I think all of us care about justice. Jesus certainly did when he said, seek first the kingdom of God and his justice. Yeah, we've translated it as righteousness, but they're really synonymous terms. So Do you think that for the average person, the reason we don't want to go too far on this is that we don't want the boomerang effect that someone's going to shine a light on our lives and say, well, what about this? Aren't you supposed to be doing this? So this antinomianism is as much a protection for yourself as it is a stated position.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's three purposes of the law, of the criminal law. One is to teach values, to teach the society, like, hey, here's the value of life. Here's when life begins, and all of that. The second purpose is to deter, right? Someone doesn't ultimately agree with what the law teaches. Okay, well, then there's strict penalties put in place for something this heinous that deter that person from committing that evil act. That's what keeps people from, who may not agree with us or who may hate us, from coming in and murdering us right now. So that's the second purpose. And then the third purpose is justice, right? Justice for the victim, which God commands. God says, whoever sheds man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, right? God delegates, as the New Testament says, the power of the sword to civil government. And the primary purpose is to bring justice upon those who commit murder. And God says we have to do that as a society. And specifically, when it comes to this issue, child sacrifice, God says that if the people of the land do not put to death that person who's, you offer their child to Molech, then God will then judge that person who committed child sacrifice, and then he'll judge the people of the land. And he says repeatedly, that's why he drove out the Canaanites, is because of this issue, among others. But this is the most oft-repeated issue that he says, this is why he's driving them out, child sacrifice. And he said that there is no atonement for murder except justice upon the one who committed murder. Not just atonement for that individual, atonement for the land, right? The blood of the innocent pollutes the land, and the only atonement for the land is for justice upon the murderer. Otherwise, if there's not justice, then God will come and bring judgment upon the whole land. That's what we have.
Yeah, and with the information, the implication, because when I asked Dr. Delgado, like, okay, so they flush these children down the toilet, what does that mean in terms of sewer systems and groundwater? And he says, well, you probably aren't going to be surprised, but nobody's studying that. And, you know, I think it's interesting, Bradley, we had people who were concerned about, should I get vaxxed or not? Oh, the economy, open borders. They're worried about everything other than God's wrath for the millions of his image bearers who have been murdered. And so I find it, when I watched your docuseries, I can't say as I enjoyed it. First of all, thank you very much. I didn't enjoy it. But I went to the next segment because I realized, even in my own mind, I had made some allowances. And if it came right down to it, I had to acknowledge, who am I siding with? So one of the things that when you bring up the three purposes of the law, I like to have people think in terms of the commuter lane, two or more persons. You may be in a rush, but you're not going to go in that lane unless you have so much money that when you're pulled over and fined, you know, $500, $1,000, it doesn't bother you. But people don't violate that restriction, whether or not you agree with commuter lanes. And I think that most of your abolitionist bills are geared towards that second function of the law. Right. How many people would do certain things if it was illegal?
Exactly. I mean, if you were to get rid of the law against homicide of born people, would there be more murders? Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Yes. And no one should question that. Well, if you make it murder to murder someone in the womb, are there going to be fewer murders? Dramatically so. Yes, absolutely. And that's the primary function, right? That's the primary function of the law, is to deter, to restrain evil. And then that's even the purpose of justice, or that's one of the purposes of justice, is ultimately to serve as a deterrent effect. You know, as Ecclesiastes says, you know, because the judgment against the evildoer is not carried out swiftly, hearts of the sons of men are set to do evil, mm-hmm. right? So if you're not bringing justice, then that deterrent effect is going away. And especially here, where it's actually in every state, in every pro-life law that's written, explicit immunity for the mother is given. The mother cannot be prosecuted, cannot be sued for intentionally, willfully, knowingly causing the death of her own child. And that's the way we're treating our preborn neighbors in our law right now.
And even that is hard to classify as pro-life or anti-abortion. It seems to be pro-women. All this effort has been to protect women in their sin. And everybody loves to bring up the hard cases. Well, we know that hard cases make bad law, but why do they keep bringing up hard cases, especially when Roe wasn't even the situation that they presented it to be? The woman wasn't raped, right? So they made a rape case,
Right.
established law. So let's get into this, and I'm going to call it a feminist view or a pro-woman view. How did the pro-life movement get co-opted with this woman worship?
Well, I mean, it infects all throughout our society, this feminist view, which is anti-God's order, and really it's the way that it's infected the church is really just so unbiblical, because it's on this issue, it's this view that women can do no wrong, that women cannot sin, that there must be some, if a woman sins, it must be the fault of some man or some institution. She's, it's like, wait a second. But then at the same time, oh, women are super strong and women should be in authority and this and that. It's like, well, which is it? Are women strong, moral agents, capable of making their own decisions, intelligent, or are they victims 100% of the time? Are they victims of society and men who lie to them and pressure them? Which is it? And the pro-life movement says, it tries to say both, but really the way that it acts within the law is that, oh, women are, helpless, defenseless victims. Even if it's a president of Planned Parenthood herself getting an abortion, it's like, well, the law should treat her like a victim. And yeah, that's what we're seeing, in fact. And it's this entire view that man is basically good and it's only in their environment that makes them do bad things. Well, that's heresy. That's
Well,
straight
maybe
from the
it's
pits
not
of
man
hell.
is basically good. Women are
Oh,
basically
I'm sorry.
good.
I'm sorry.
You
Yes,
got to
women
get
are
that right.
basically good. Right, exactly. That's right.
And to
Yeah.
me, it infantilizes women. It says we're, every woman's a victim. I actually heard in the docuseries, sometimes I want to get up and punch the people, but it's like, why break my television, right? It's like, but this woman who said every woman, she's a pro-life executive of some organization. Every woman's a victim. And don't be hard on her. She's already lost her baby. Like, oh my.
Yes.
And then you show people who are popping those abortion pills, going, I'm killing my baby. What are you going to do about it? And that's where I think, because we've become so relativistic, people can't think biblically because they haven't been trained to. So, for example, how are we going to know if a woman killed her baby? You can't
Right.
enforce that law. So isn't this a lot of effort for no reason? Well, I know the answer to that. Explain why that's not a lot of effort for no reason.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the law to deter. And so, you pass a law, make it murder for everyone, make murdering anyone illegal for everyone. And then that's going to deter that conduct. And then if there's like, well, wait a second, but there really are some victims, it's like, okay, yeah, we agree. We agree that there are some victims. But we have this entire justice system to figure out who's a victim, who's not. We give everyone the presumption of victimhood, if you will, right? The law presumes innocence until proven. So there's an entire law enforcement, justices of the peace to do warrants, grand juries, prosecutors, judges, trial juries, sentencing juries, appellate courts, governors, boards of pardons and parole,
Let me
all of,
interrupt you, Brad,
yeah.
but we have an overburdened justice system. Shouldn't they be going after real criminals?
I mean, how much more of a real criminal do you get than someone who murders someone?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
if that's not the job of the government, then why do we even have a government? That's the most fundamental. That's when God, and I believe God initially, he did, there wasn't civil government. He had not delegated the power of the sword to man or the power of life and death until after the flood, Noah. God then says he delegates that authority over life and death to man for capital crimes. And specifically, he says, whoever sheds man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. He now gives man the authority to execute murderers. That's why God created civil government in the first place, is specifically on this issue, to provide justice on this issue. And so, if our government doesn't have the resources for that, maybe we should stop spending money, not maybe, we should stop spending money on almost everything else and devote more resources to this, so that way we can have justice and it can be swift as it needs to be with due process, you know. And that's the whole thing. The defendants in every case, especially a case like this, get tons of due process to make sure that we're being very careful. And can it be improved? And should it be improved? Yes. But it's a system that we trust to protect our own lives right now. And so we should extend it to protect the lives of preborn children as well.
So to play out some of the scenarios that would go through people's head. Okay, so we found out this woman, we can prove she purchased the abortion pill protocol. She used it. There's witnesses that say her baby died. You know, they were there. They're called in, whether or not they agree with abortion, but they're supposed to say what it is they saw. And
Right.
so people ask, are we really going to round up those women and put them in prison? Is that what you want to see? How do you respond to that allegation?
Yeah, well, certainly no one's talking about going backwards. People that have had abortions in the past, the law allows for that. The Constitution prohibits us going backwards. All the bills we write say you can't go backwards, right? That's we no one's talking about doing that. That's between them and God. You know, but as far as moving forward, yes, the law should prohibit it the same way it prohibits all other homicide. And yes, should people be in fear of the law if they choose to murder their child? Absolutely, yes. Should they be in fear of law enforcement coming in arresting them if they choose to murder their child? Absolutely, yes. That's what deters them from doing it in the first place. That's what saves lives. And that's what God tells us to do. And so that's what we should do.
It's interesting because with technology, we have the ability to see things that maybe 100 years ago they couldn't. And so many couples, even from their obstetricians, are encouraged to do genetic testing early on in their pregnancy. And then they go see a genetic counselor who gives them a variety of options. But from what I understand, 3 out of 4 people who go through genetic counseling decide for various reasons that they're going to end the pregnancy. Are those numbers, when those things actually are diagnosed and then quote dealt with, are they included in your understanding into abortion numbers?
In my understanding, yes, as far as an actual pregnancy, you know, there are children who are genetically tested in IVF situations who are discarded, that the numbers are not published, and those are much more difficult to figure out. But as far as those that are aborted, you know, after genetic testing, after, you know, after there's a pregnancy, yes, those numbers are tracked.
It's shocking to me because the very institutions that we're supposed to go to for if you're sick and you need help,
Yes.
I don't know how any medical person, I realize first do no harm is not a biblical value that is quoted, it's the Hippocratic Oath. But when you look at it, how can you not call this harm? Even if you want to
Yeah.
concede that the mom has reasons that she might want to do this, how is any abortion not harm to the child?
What's interesting is that even the Hippocratic Oath, the original, it actually said that not only that the do no harm part of it, it's a longer oath, but people don't realize it actually says that I will not prescribe any pessary to a woman to, I forget the exact words, but to commit an abortion. Pessary being like abortion pill and any medicine or concoction to create an abortion. So, you know, it's been this abortion's not a new thing. It's been around a long time. People have been killing their born children, child sacrifice, for a long time. And it's not because everybody's been victims. It's because of sin in our hearts, and the purpose of the law is not, you know, the law can't legislate morality in the sense of the law doesn't make people moral, but the law can teach morality, and the law can legislate morality in the sense of legislate on moral issues. In fact, that's all that the law can do, right? All laws, no law is neutral. It's all based upon moral standards. And so, yes, the law can legislate morality and restrain people from committing, in this case, criminal immorality.
And I think we often lose sight of the fact, even with the exceptions that people bring up, let's say a woman is under duress.
Specifically with duress, if someone has a gun to their head, that all the bills we've written, then yeah, that's not a crime for the mother, because again, it's not a situation where she even can lay down her life for another. The another is inside of her. So if she dies, the baby dies too. So it's a situation where yeah, that would not be a crime. People, we could discuss what would be the best thing for her to do from a moral perspective, but
Right.
yeah, if she's not a criminal in that situation. She, at that point, it's kind of like the pro-life movement is like, let's treat every woman like they're under duress, right? Because someone who's under duress is no longer a moral agent, right? They have a gun to their head. They're being threatened with death if they don't do XYZ. Someone puts a gun to your head and says, drive me to the local convenience store, I'm going to rob it, and you do it. Yeah, you've not committed a crime, right? You did not have free moral agency. Someone forced you to do it. But the pro-life movement is saying, hey, let's treat all women like they don't have free moral agency. Let's treat them all like they're being forced into this.
We've got this idea that we all got to find a way that we can be a victim so that we're not exactly responsible. Some people collect victimhood, other people shop for it, other people sell it. And nobody, there's no money in advocating for the unborn in the sense that they'll pay you. So it has a lot to do with how we live before God and whether or not, as a Christian society, we are wise. Well, I don't think we've been wise primarily because we don't fear God. Wisdom comes as a result of that, not I'll be wise and then someday I'll, take God's word seriously.
Well, you started with talking about true religion, looking at orphans and widows and their distress. Like you just said, orphans and widows can't really do anything for you. They can't compensate you for standing up for them. So that's where your true love is demonstrated in what do you do for people who are being oppressed, who can't do anything for you in return,
Right.
right? What is love? And God tells us, He demonstrates His own love for us in this, and while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Love, there's no greater love than a man laid down his life for his friend. Love is sacrifice. And so love is doing for others who can't do back for you, for widows and orphans who they can't pay you. They can't pay you back. So that's true love that you're showing them. That's why that's true religion is demonstrated by loving people who can't repay you. That's how we as a church in America today, we are demonstrating by and large our lack of love because we are not loving the most vulnerable who can do the least back for us and compensate us the least. We're not doing for them and looking out for them in their distress. They're being carried off to the slaughter. We're called to rescue those. And we're like, no, I've got to spend more time arguing on the internet instead of
Yeah.
doing this.
And the second part of pure religion is to keep yourself unspotted from the world, which means that you might be ridiculed for saying, "Thus saith the Lord." And you've got to find better arguments. I've had family members tell me, "Keep religion out of it. Give me scientific reasons. I think you'll make more headway." And that's just a red herring because it's my science versus your science. But as soon as we say, "Thus saith the Lord," now we've just put down the card that can't be trumped unless you want to say, well, God doesn't have authority here.
Well, and that's what at the end of the day, it ultimately comes down to authority because they're like, give me science. And you give them science, 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 science all day on this. They'll ultimately come back and say, like, well, I believe mom's rights trump baby's rights. It's like, oh, wait a second. So it actually does come down to a question of authority. It's just you believe in humanism. You believe that man is the final word, or in this case, woman is the final word.
Right.
I believe God is. And so it's ultimately a religious issue, whether people are willing to admit that or not.
And then what's so interesting to me, we have all these groups that talk about don't drink during your pregnancy. It's not good for your child. Suing pharmaceutical companies who gave women certain sorts of drugs to help with like nausea or morning sickness, and it was harmful for the baby. I'm not going to contest those things. You know, it's hard when you're pregnant and you're sick, and there's certain things that you can't take because it might
Right.
harm your child. But somehow or other, we think that murdering the child is of less significance than drinking 2 glasses of wine while we're pregnant.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of my legal practice as an attorney is also defending parental rights. And you know, we have in this entire system about child protective services, you know, protecting children. And yet it's in the same states, which is really every state, where mothers can legally murder their children. But oh, but once they're born, then we'll that now, you know, now we're gonna, you know, go overboard even in protecting them and saying, well, you can't give your children, you can't do this, or if they want Cap'n Crunch, you gotta give them that. And yet, oh well, but if you just murdered them before they're born, then yeah, that's totally okay.
Yeah.
You know, we're very double-minded culture.
And I think it's a self-serving double-mindedness because if you leave me alone,
Right.
I'll leave you alone. So let me bring
Right.
up another thing. The movie Amazing Grace, years ago, I forget when it came out, was all about the life of William Wilberforce and how inspiring it was that he fought the fight against slavery. And interestingly enough, both sides, abolition and the pro-life side claim William Wilberforce as their inspiration. Was he an incrementalist or was he an abolitionist? I think it's important to identify that because sometimes people like to ride on the coattails of someone who doesn't represent their position at all.
Right. Yeah, I'm not a Wilberforce expert. I love him. I think he's a godly man, did great things. You know, I think he himself later in life even said, you know, there's some compromises that he had made kind of on the incremental side that he regretted, and that he would be, you know, he would not do those things again. But he explicitly said that the chief enemy of abolition, the chief proponent of slavery, the people keeping slavery around were not the slavers or the slave traders. It was the gradualists is what he called them. The gradual, those who say like, yes, we should abolish slavery, but we should do so gradually, right? And that's what we have in our country today. And that just extends it. It just delays it, delays it, delays it, delays it. There's always some more increment along the way until you get people. And again, we see the fruits of it in many ways in our society. One of them is so many pro-life people and Christians in this country think that in their state, oh, well, there's no more abortion clinics in my state, so we've won. That's a problem. It gives you a false sense of victory. There's more abortions than ever in your state, but you think you've won because you've passed these incremental victories that didn't actually outlaw it the way God says to. And even on the numbers, it hasn't actually protected babies, you know, as far as overall. But it makes people feel that way, which then takes people out of the fight. And so we've got to stick with what does God command? What does God forbid? That's what we should be commanding our magistrates to do. And that's what we have then moral authority to then command magistrates. Because if we're saying you've got to regulate the who, what, when, where, why, how of abortion, well, God doesn't say that. So we're just expressing our own opinion. But when we say, no, thus says the Lord, you shall not murder, here's what the law should be about murder. Then we can speak with moral authority because we're speaking what God says.
Yeah. If people took it into other venues, let's regulate adultery. Let's regulate theft. You know, well, in where I live, they did sort of regulate theft. If it was under $1,000, you weren't going to be prosecuted. And what happened? Well, there was more of it, and businesses closed because they couldn't sustain the losses. So a lot of times when we have these intellectual arguments, we fail to see that God will bring judgment. It doesn't have to be a baseball bat on your head. It could be there's polluted groundwater. It could be that now you have rampant crime. That, well, what does that have to do with abortion? Well, God sees all of it. And you're not going to get rulers, justices, legislators who are categorically better than the people who vote them in. And I think that's the harsh reality. After watching the docuseries, I was like, there's nobody to point a finger to. We can't blame the politicians on this. We can't even blame the abortionists. In one sense, somebody wants a service and is willing to pay for it, and they're willing to do it. Well, hitmen do that too. We haven't legalized that yet, but maybe we should, you know? Maybe if you don't like your spouse, you should just go find a hitman. And, you know, let's just say that this is a category of law that really doesn't pertain. So we can take it to the ridiculous. And I really do hope the creative people out there, I mean, you're in law, so you fight your fight within those. But there are creatives out there who could produce film and caricatures to show people exactly how we've compromised. And I do think that it's everybody's fight. Don't say, well, hey, I'm all for you, Brad. Keep up the good fight. Hey, can I send you a couple of dollars? Which I'm sure you would appreciate if somebody sent you a couple of dollars. But that's not what you're advocating for, is it? What are you advocating for?
I'm advocating that every Christian should do what they can, where they are, with what they have, with their opportunities, where the Holy Spirit leads them to fight against this. And that's going to look different from every person, you know, for each person. But all of us have a duty to love our preborn neighbors as ourselves, however we can, right? Not everybody has the same opportunities or resources or anything like that. But whatever you have, where you are, whatever season you're in, there are ways that you can do that. And so I'd encourage you to really search and find what you can do to love your neighbor. It's like the parable of the Good Samaritan. It's like, well, I'm not beating up people. I'm not a bandit beating up people, right? The priest and the Levite were like, well, I didn't beat that man up, so I'm okay. It's like, well, no. That's step one is, yeah, don't be the actual bandits beating people up and leaving them for dead on the side of the road. Yeah, don't be that person. But then it's not enough just to not be that person. It's like, well, I didn't do it. I'm going to walk on the other side of the road. That's not my problem. No. Who's the neighbor? Who's the good Samaritan? Who's the one who loves? It's the one who goes out of his way without any obligation, right, without any legal obligation. He goes and he takes care of that victim. That's what the church needs to be. Otherwise, we're just the priests and the Levites. We're just hypocrites, and we're not really loving.
So give people web address where they can find out more, where they can get access to the docuseries, things like that.
Yeah, they can check out the docuseries. I think it's eye-opening is the phrase that I keep hearing from a lot of people. Abortionfree.com. You can go there, and then that then gets you access, or you can then access the YouTube videos. It's all free. There's no cost. You can access it at abortionfree.com, watch those videos, share those videos, or go directly to the Foundation Abolish Abortion YouTube page and watch the documentary, docuseries, six 30-minute episodes, around 30-minute episodes there, and share that, please. Get that around, because a lot of people are in the dark. You know, their pastors are not telling them what's going on, you know, or the pastors don't know what's going on. That's a lot of that. Or the pro-life organizations are misleading them and saying, oh, no, these states are abortion-free. And so people really need to know the truth before they can know what their role is and what to do about it. And so please go there. You can follow me on Twitter, Bradley W. Pierce, or Foundation Abolish Abortion on Twitter, and check it out and to see what you can be doing to love your neighbor as yourself.
All right. And let me encourage people, because a lot of times after hearing something like this, people go, okay, I want to do something. First of all, go watch the videos. Secondly, since they're free and almost every Sunday school, discipleship group, Bible study, take 6 weeks out. Actually, you can combine three in a night, for goodness sakes, and watch it and have a discussion. What can we do? You know, Planned Parenthood goes into schools and have conversations. Why not say, go to your school board, I want to go in and have a conversation. Don't just let the one voice of kill your baby, it's okay, it's your right, be there, and start pushing back. I think if we've learned anything, that when you push back, a lot of the bullies back down. Now, there's still some very wicked people who will fight like the devil, literally, but most of the time, they're people who don't have the moral underpinning to say, I'm going to fight you on this. And so I would encourage people to do it. Christmas is coming up. Gee, you have a whole bunch of family that say, I want you to see this. Not that they have to agree with every single point, but let's have a discussion. I'm sure that as people get more informed on this, they'll have their own ideas. But before we go, I have one question for you. So as a husband, father, professional, has this advocacy for the unborn, and you're also a homeschooling family, as far as I know.
Right.
How do you keep optimistic? I'm sure a lot of people will go, how long has he been doing this? Doesn't he get weary?
I mean, we all get weary, right? You know, that's why there has to be this command, you know, do not grow weary in well-doing, right? Because we do grow weary. And it's definitely wearying to see the scripture, you know, Psalms put it, you know, seeing the wicked prospering, you know, seeing children continuing to die. But where I get, you know, optimism and hope and confidence and why I sleep well at night is that I know that God's on his throne and he's told me what to do and I'm seeking to do that. And when I fall short of that, I know that he is gracious to forgive me when I come to him in humility. And I know that he's using all this for his glory and for the good of his church and for my sanctification. And so I don't have to be anxious about tomorrow. I don't have to be anxious. I don't have to fret because of evildoers. I can just rest in him and have confidence that he's God. He's given me a part to play in all of this and duties, but the results are his, and we can just rest in that.
And I would say, no offense to your advocacy work or your law practice, I think the greatest service you do is to be a model and a teacher to your soon-to-be 12 children, who each of them will have grown up with faith without works is not really faith. And prayer without action is not really prayer. Because if you're just relying on, oh God, fix the abortion issue, oh God, shut down the pharmaceutical company, and you don't do anything about it, you've missed, I think, the point of the Great Commission. Because yes, God could do whatever he wants, however he wants it, but he chooses to do it through his church and primarily through the family.
And I agree. You know, God works generationally. You know, I would love for abortion to be abolished in America and in the world in my lifetime, but probably not going to be, just to be fair, unless God does something I'm not expecting. But God works generationally, and that gives him more glory even to work generationally, because then there's not one person who gets the credit for it, or one generation that gets the credit. It's and so that is a big reason why we do what we do, is as an example to the next generation, and seeking to be faithful there as an example to them.
Check out Brad's resources. And if you have any question, like, how could I possibly do something effective, write to me, outofthequestionpodcast@gmail.com. I'd be more than happy to have a discussion with you to help you see that God has positioned you to be effective in this area if you will be obedient to that call. Brad, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been great to be with you.
And especially thank your wife. Someday I should just talk with her, because I'm sure there's a whole podcast there.
Oh, yes. Very good. She's awesome.
Yes, I'm sure.
Thanks for listening to Out of the Question. For more information on this and other topics, please visit chalcedon.edu.